This is the story. The story of a village that would not be destroyed. And you'll hear another story. The story of a little girl who opened the door to fame by locking a door behind her. This is the story. The village by the river was composed of only a few houses, but day by day, week by week, it grew larger, a fact which Bordica's clansmen noted with bitter resentment as they maintained a stealthy vigil in the deep woods surrounding the little settlement. The silent watchmen in the forest observed that more and more colonists were arriving from Rome in that 61st year of the first century of Christendom, and each new arrival was dutifully reported to Bordica, the fearful, implacable, uncompromising leader of the clan. And with each new report from his sentinels in the woods, the smoldering fire of hatred in Bordica's heart grew deeper, more malevolent. These men from far-off Rome were invading the land of Bordica's clansmen, and in his wisdom, the clan chief knew that they must be driven out, or Bordica's people themselves would be dispossessed. But to the urgings of his people that he attacked the village immediately, Bordica would shake his head and reply thoughtfully,
"Wait. The time is not yet. Wait."
And so while Bordica patiently planned the inevitable destruction of the hated village of the Romans who violated his land, his men silently watched the little settlement from the forest, watched and waited. And though Bordica and his clansmen did not know it, their patience was soon rewarded. Into the village one day came a courier from Rome who sought out the house of Sutanus, the military governor of the village. He handed Sutanus a message. The military governor read it quickly, then summoned the commander of the Roman soldiers assigned to protect the village. To him he said,
"We are needed in Rome. Together with you and your soldiers, I am ordered to return immediately."
Sutanus and his men fell to the task of preparing for their journey, pleased at the opportunity to leave that wilderness outpost and return to the comfort and delights of Rome. But the colonists who were to remain behind unprotected pleaded with the military governor to leave at least a few warriors, but their appeal was rejected. Orders from Rome, Sutanus reminded them, were to be followed to the letter. He scoffed at their fear of the phantom Bordica, asking scornfully,
"What can that savage do to Rome?"
Whereupon, Sutanus and his soldiers, amid much pomp and ceremony, left the village, starting down the road through the forest, the long road that led to Rome, unaware of the calculating eyes that watched their departure from the cool, lurking darkness of the forest. Perhaps the people of the village didn't hear it. The long, mournful call of the ram's horn, perhaps they did, but did not suspect its meaning, did not realize that the patient but resolute Bordica, having been told of the departure of Sutanus and his soldiers, had said to his clansmen,
Now is the time to strike. Sound the call!
And so the call, a long, low note on the ram's horn, had gone out. And in the silence of one night, Bordica's clansmen gathered about him, received their orders, and then, swiftly and soundlessly, they darted into the forest. In a huge semicircle that started on the bank of the river above the village and ran through the forest to the bank below, Bordica's clansmen closed in upon the settlement. At the edge of the clearing in the woods, they waited for the last long blast of the ram's horn that would be the signal for the attack. The night deepened. The village slept. The clansmen waited. And then, Bordica's men sprang from the woods and swooped down upon the village, giving voice to blood-chilling screams of vengeance and mad fury. By the time the cold, impassionate dawn broke upon the forest, the village lay in smoldering ruins. Every one of its buildings had been burned to the ground. Every one of the village's inhabitants lay dead, systematically murdered by Boudica and his clansmen. And with this grisly work done, with his grim resolution fulfilled, Boudica declared,
"Now, never again shall an intruder build a village on this land."
But Boudica, the vengeful Celtic chieftain, was wrong. Today, the echo of his prediction, uttered nearly 1,900 years ago, is drowned by the clamor in the streets of the great metropolis, which stands on the site where that hated Roman village once stood. For the Romans returned and rebuilt their village in the wilderness, and once it had been reestablished, it grew until it has become the most populous city in the world, the capital of a valiant people, the queen city of an empire whose vastness dwarfed that of even the Romans who founded it. For the village by the river, which Boudica thought he had destroyed forever, became the city of London. Yes, this is the story. The little girl on the ferry boat, dressed in her Sunday best, behaved like a child out on a great adventure. And that's exactly what she was. All by herself, she dressed in her newest clothes, left her home, and embarked upon her journey to New York City to see about her future. An item which can be of momentous concern to a child of the age that Gladys Smith was in the year 1899. She sat primly on the outer deck of the ferry boat without a tremor of fear, though her little hands gripped her purse tightly, for it contained the magnificent sum of 50 cents, money that she'd saved over the weeks to defray the expenses of this excursion. There was but one thing that bothered her. The loud, throaty noise of the ferry boat's steam whistle made her jump every time it sounded, and she'd look around after each blast to see if anyone had noticed her momentary loss of poise. It would be embarrassing if they had. But in due time, the overwater leg of her journey was completed. And when the ferry had nosed into its slip, Gladys marched unhesitantly into the noisy maelstrom of New York City. Without paying the slightest heed to the city's brawling din, she boarded a trolley car which would take her to her destination, the famous Belasco Theater. With the same self-assurance that she had displayed throughout her journey, Gladys strode to the stage door of the Belasco and entered. As she stood backstage at the theater, the first look of wonderment and awe that she had displayed since leaving home crept into her eyes. Even at the age of 7, little Gladys's love for the stage was deep-rooted. Here was where she wanted to spend her life, here in the wonderful make-believe world of the theater. And if she could not become an actress, the dread of that possibility swept over her like a dark cloud and a chill wind. Suddenly, she was abruptly pulled from her thoughts by a voice that demanded,
"Hey, what are you doing here?"
Gladys whirled around and stared at the burly form of a doorkeeper who stood before her. Swallowing her timidity and fright, she asked to see Mr. David Belasco, the director, and the burly man barked,
"Wait here,"
and disappeared. When he had gone, Gladys stole across to the wings of the stage on which the actors were rehearsing Belasco's coming production of The Warrens of Virginia. Out in the dim theater, she could see the doorman approach another man who was slumped distraught and gloomy in one of the seats. The second man, Gladys knew, must be David Belasco, the great director. And then, suddenly, like a blow across the face, all her hopes for becoming an actress suddenly crumpled as Belasco rose angrily to his feet and bellowed,
"I haven't time to talk to some child."
Little Gladys was fighting back tears when the burly man returned and ushered her to the stage door, but they were tears of frustration and desperation rather than disappointment. She had to talk to Mr. Belasco. She had to. And acting on an impulse, she wrenched away from the burly man and dashed out on the stage, disrupting the rehearsal. The man stormed after her, roaring,
"Hey, you come back here!"
With the doorkeeper chasing her, Gladys dodged about the stage for a moment, then jumped across the footlights and down into the orchestra pit. Still pursued by the infuriated doorkeeper, she scampered up the aisle to the lobby of the theater and through the door to a small office. The burly man came thundering after her, charging into the office like an enraged bull, bellowing,
"Hurry now! I got you, you little minx!"
And so it seemed that he did have her. For there was no other exit from the office. But for one split second after entering the office, the doorkeeper did not know where the little girl was hiding. Then he realized that she must have hid behind the door. But he didn't realize it soon enough. For even as he swung around, Gladys was darting back out through the door, which she slammed shut behind her and locked.
"Hey! Let me out of here! Let me out!"
With the incarcerated doorkeeper hammering on the locked door, screaming for his release, Gladys dropped the key in her purse, straightened her bonnet and dress, and marched back down the aisle and approached an amused and respectful Mr. Belasco, demanding that she be given an opportunity to play the part of the child Betty Warren in his production of The Warrens of Virginia. And Belasco, needing a child actress for the part, promptly agreed to give her a try at the part, declaring with a twinkle in his eye,
"Anyone who can outwit one of my doormen deserves a chance."
And when Belasco's Warrens of Virginia opened in New York, little Gladys Smith was featured in the role of Betty Warren, embarking on a career that took her to the top of her profession. But it was in motion pictures, rather than on the stage, that Gladys Smith obtained her greatest fame, becoming one of the most beloved stars ever seen on the silver screen. A star who was affectionately known to the public as America's Sweetheart. Yes, little Gladys Smith, a child who won her chance in the theater by outwitting a doorman, was Mary Pickford. This is the story.